From KQED Public Radio and the California Report, this is the Capital Notes podcast for Friday, May 20th. I'm John Myers from KQED. Anthony York from the LA Times.
This is our last pre-rapture podcast.
Oh, that's right. This might actually be the last podcast ever then. Well, no, the rapture lasts several months, doesn't it?
Well, it depends. I mean, either you'll go to heaven or you hang out for 4 or 5 months while the world, you know, slowly disintegrates.
Haven't we been living that, though?
Well, the real destruction isn't until October, but the exit clause for the believers is coming tomorrow at 6 o'clock Christian Standard Time.
Okay, but what I was going to say is, haven't we been living that whole beginning of the end in California with the state's finances and everything else for a while?
Budget segue.
Oh, you know, I had, come on, had to. I had to get us out of that very strange topic back into what we normally do.
Salvation is here. You haven't heard the good news?
Tell us the good news.
The gospel of $6.6 billion.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to get somebody really mad at us if we keep going here.
Let's stop.
Let's try to, yeah. Well, anyway. So, yeah, this was the week of the revised budget, the lovely, well-named May Revise.
Or May Revision for you grammatical sticklers.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, you know, I'm in radio. We don't have a grammatical standard, but apparently in newspapers you do. You're not able to call it the May Revise. Actually, I wouldn't call it the May Revise on the air for radio because that sounds just way too wonky.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. That's just for us. That's just for us oddballs who watch state government. So Governor Brown's revised budget came out on Monday and said, hey, we have some more money.
We have some more money, $6.6 billion. Over the 2 years.
Yeah.
But the governor's plan remained largely unchanged. He did make some tweaks. He pared back his income tax portion of his tax package, sort of seeding the point that income taxes would remain at the lower levels in this calendar year, 2011. So he wants a 4-year extension instead of 5. He backed off of his plan to eliminate enterprise zones, instead calling for some changes and reforms and introducing some new business tax credits to try to sweeten the pot on the single sales factor proposal. But other than that, you know, not a whole lot different.
I mean, left the redevelopment abolishment in place.
Even though that's probably going to have to change.
Modified, I think the only other big modification, though, is school funding. That's an extension of the revenues. It is an extension of the fact that there's more revenue. But in addition to that, the governor backed out some of the January plans. Most notably, he has canceled the not-so-favored thing from local school officials, which was a $2 billion deferral of school funding, which would have left them on the hook for finding the money until the state gave it to them later. This is part of his wall of debt strategy. And also he's agreed to start he wants to start paying some of the money back owed to education with some of this money. Again, right. This is every time he said wall of debt, by the way, Monday, I kept thinking of the Ronnie Spector wall of sound.
Yeah.
So, that's no, Phil Spector. Ronnie Spector. Wrong Spector.
Well, Ronnie Spector, I think. Recorded anyway.
That's
another podcast.
As we all often say, that's another podcast. But yeah, so I kept thinking of the wall of sound, and apparently that's just wrong.
Yeah.
But the wall of debt, the governor's new phrase for all of the one-time fixes over the years, but the one-time fixes that have left the state on the hook for a lot of money that it doesn't have now or later. So I think those were probably the biggest changes. But I agree with you on the macro, on the whole. This was not a big change from January, and also not a big change from January on the policy and political front. Governor did not lay out a plan B. He did not lay out a scenario for what happens if his tax extensions are rejected by the legislature and or by the voters. And so when you and I were talking last week about what we were looking for, we were focused on the revenue issue, I think, and would he – lay out something like that.
And cuts with triggers.
And he did not.
He didn't. And he indicated that he would before. And, you know, he may have to, if we do end up with an election, he may have to adopt some contingencies in order to satisfy lenders on Wall Street that will lend the state about $13 billion it needs in the short term to cover its debt. We can get into that a little bit later. I mean, in terms of macro takeaways from the budget proposal, you mentioned this wall of debt. I mean, the most interesting thing about the governor's introduction of that phrase. I think it's a political pivot. You know, there were some questions, you know, and we've already seen Republicans say, you know, because there's all this new money now, hey, look, we don't have to vote for these taxes that Brown wants because the economy is recovering. Well, but Brown is trying to sort of refocus and saying, okay, you know, we dodged a bullet for this year, but we still need to take care of the long term structural problems that have us in these chronic deficits. And I think that's what the wall of debt idea. That's what's behind the wall of debt idea.
Well, and at the end of the first week, I mean, one of the things that we all talked about when we knew that revenues were going to be better than projected, and I still am somewhat curious what a different administration, not just the Schwarzenegger administration, but any other administration, would have projected about revenues in January vis-a-vis the Jerry Brown administration, because I still think that Brown, true to his nature of being a bit of a tight-fisted, some would say thrifty, others would call it cheaper guy, I think he may have downplayed the revenues and asked to have a very conservative forecast in January, in which case some of this money probably would have been projected otherwise, but it bought him a couple of things. A, it made him look prudent, right? That's a good political point.
Right.
And it also put in place a lot of the tougher options that had to be carried out so that he could always come back and have some maneuvering room in May.
Right.
That's not some kind of nefarious, sneaky thing to do, but it just does reflect, I think, the philosophy of the guy in the corner office, which is let's be careful. And I think that his
right.
revenue estimate was probably careful, in which case this isn't all totally unexpected revenue.
And there's signs of that caution even in the allocation of this, you know, quote unquote windfall. The governor took off the table $1 billion that he had scored in money that the state was going to borrow from some tobacco tax revenues from Prop 10.
Local childhood development commissions.
Yeah. Right. That idea has been challenged in courts by the county officials who administer the money. And so Brown said, well, since there's a lawsuit pending, we can't count on that being able to use that $1 billion. Now, that is in direct conflict with what we've seen over the last few years, where you see the state scoring savings on everything from taking transit money to to redevelopment money, which they know will end up in court, and the state has lost a number of these cases, and so even though it's scored as savings when a final budget deal is passed, very quickly a new multi, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of budget hole is ripped into the budget immediately. And Brown intentionally did not do that with this tobacco money.
However, a fair point. But at the same time, the other thing that very likely could be challenged in court and he may lose on is the redevelopment proposal, which is $1.7 billion. It depends
right.
on who you talk to. But that one is a very different place in the budget, was the point
right.
I was going to make, is that
right.
the Prop 10 money is kind of a pullout. It's fairly easy to do. You pull out the redevelopment thing, a lot of things start to fall that the governor has constructed because
right.
it's the schools, it's the local realignment money, it's all of these different
backfill
things.
$1 billion
yeah.
in Medi-Cal cuts. And
yeah.
so, I mean, the other thing that the governor, you know, that could is, you know, I believe the legislature has already passed reductions in the rate the state will pay doctors who treat Medi-Cal patients. That's something that's being litigated in terms of what those healthcare providers, their rate of reimbursement, that's being litigated in courts currently. And I believe that the early cases, the states that have tried to cut the rates have lost. And so, you know, there are other things that could potentially blow holes in the budget. You know, Prop 10, the Prop 10 litigation was one of them, but there are a couple other out there, the redevelopment and the Medi-Cal provider rate issue that we should watch for if you want to be truly, truly fiscally prudent and conservative.
The first week, with this first week now over with the governor's revised budget on Monday, I mean, I think one thing that had been talked about a lot was, you know, what reaction it was going to have in both parties or what the reaction was going to be. Predictably, as you're right, we saw Republicans and fiscal conservatives and anti-tax groups and whoever come out and say, you know, the economy's recovering, we don't need the taxes, which I want to talk about in a moment. But what we did not see yet, and I don't know if this means we will not see it or it's just too early, because we do start the budget subcommittee process next week, at the Capitol. Will we see some Democrats and other groups who are very unhappy about some of the cuts that have been made say we should move some of this money back? Now, that may be pretty impossible to do given how much of it went to schools, and you may have some kind of, you know, that the governor may have inoculated himself somehow in that. But maybe you'll see more lining up again as we've seen through this year so far. I mean, I think it's really one of the one real stories of the year so far is Democrats and Democratic groups largely lining up behind Jerry Brown and letting him take the lead, right, and not picking apart the plan he has, even if they don't like it.
Well, and the big issue, I think, when you're talking about possible schisms between Brown and other Democrats is the issue of an election. Now, the administration will argue and has argued, and Brown himself has said, look, the only way we're going to get any budget that includes anything that includes any tax revenue is if we have an election as soon as possible, as early as September now, he's saying.
Well, let's tease apart the point you're trying to make. One, we'll talk about the timing in a minute, which is where you're going, I think.
Yeah,
but his argument for, just to make clear to people, his argument for why it's the only way you're going to get any money is because he believes Republicans won't vote for the alternative. They won't vote, right, to raise the taxes themselves.
Well, there's this sort of academic debate going on in Democratic circles. You know, should we or should we not, you know, have an election, and should Brown break his pledge on his campaign pledge to put all taxes before the people? Well, I mean, you know, to quote an old Saturday Night Live skit, the question is moot, the administration would say, because, look, there weren't even votes, Republican votes, for a budget with that had an election. So why would you think that there would be votes for a budget that had taxes with no election? I mean, it's kind of fallacious reasoning, which, you know, which very well may be true. And yet it is although it may be a hypothetical at this point, it's emerging as a contentious issue among and a tension between, I think, legislative leaders and interest groups on one side and Brown on the other.
Well, and a lot of the argument about the election to date, and I'm not saying that it wasn't a policy argument, but there was a political argument a lot, which is that, right, the polling shows the taxes are unpopular. What do we do if they lose?
Right.
The fiscal argument, which was out there and still continues, I would argue, just percolate, but got a lot more percolatory, hotter, or more.
I think I read something about it in the LA Times.
More supported.
This,
yes,
I
you did. And actually, it was on radio yesterday, but you didn't hear that. Was on Thursday when the nonpartisan legislative analyst's office, headed up by ledge analyst Mac Taylor, concluded that if there's going to be an election, that it should be as late as possible in the fiscal year to come, which would theoretically be June, because there's a, right, standing election already, a primary election. That it should be as late as possible to give schools, local governments, other funding, other agencies, other groups a year's worth of revenues to count on, that they knew what their budgets were going to be for a year. And their argument is doing it in the middle of the year, the middle of the fiscal year, early in the fiscal year, which again, this is now think late summer, fall, you know, Christmas time, whatever you would pick, November, I mean, I don't know. But that doing that would raise a lot of uncertainty because they wouldn't know how to budget either with the money or without the money, because, right, if the money went away from the voters, now they're in the middle of the year, they don't have options. And schools has been talked about a lot. Schools are limited by when they make decisions to hire or fire staffers, teachers, whoever. That would be very difficult for them. So the LAO now has given, I would argue, a patina of nonpartisanship to that argument that has before, right, been made more by, if not partisan warriors, certainly big interest group people, education, right, advocates, others.
Although an important distinction that I tried to include in the story I wrote, but I think may have gotten lost, is that the legislative analyst, unlike the Democrats, the legislative analyst is sort of agnostic on the idea of the revenues themselves. He's saying, hey, look, it doesn't matter. You know, he doesn't care whether the sales taxes and income taxes and vehicle taxes are extended or increased. Whether or not they are, he thinks that certainty, you know, and stability and predictability in the revenue picture is of more importance. So either do it or don't.
Yeah. But, predictability in budgeting, I think,
right,
is what it is. Whether,
right,
whether it's a bigger budget or a smaller budget, right, uncertainty is bad. Right.
Right. And so, whereas the Democrats say, hey, we need the revenues.
Yeah.
So, an important distinction there. But you're right. I mean, I think the case that Mac Taylor laid out on Thursday does sort of lend a less partisan, less political backing for the position that has been embraced by Democrats.
What do you think the reaction is on the Republican side about waiting until 2012 if there's going to be a deal for an election? Because, I mean, one argument out there
is... You're asking me to crawl into the heads. I mean...
Yeah, but what I was going to say is one argument out there is that some of the reforms that Republicans would want as a condition for an election, if that fact actually is ever agreed to, things like a spending cap, pensions, things like that, they would still need to be crafted. They need to be crafted and vetted and worked out somehow, which takes longer time than, say, the governor wanting an election in September.
Right.
I mean, so in some way that might actually work to that case. Though when we get into 2012, I think there's lots of political currents out there that could blow things all kinds of ways.
Right.
So,
well,
if you're a Republican, maybe you don't want pensions and spending caps on the ballot. You know what I'm saying? At the same time, yeah, in June
as when taxes.
Yeah, who?
Anyway. Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, and the question is, will there be Republican votes? I mean, I think the governor brings up a pretty fundamental point here, is that, look, there's no evidence that there would be any Republican support for a temporary extension of taxes. I mean, even what the governor's asking for. The governor wants legislators to extend the sales and vehicle taxes that are set to roll off on July 1st. He wants those extended until the election. He wants an election, in his words, as soon as possible. Yesterday morning, he mentioned the word September, I think, for the first time, you know, that I had heard him. And so he's talking about a fall, late summer, fall election. And he's saying, but his argument is a political one, too, saying that's the only way we're going to get Republican votes. There are no Republican votes, you know, and even then there aren't Republican votes for that. So why would you think that there are Republican votes for extending taxes for a year, for 3 months, even the 3 months that Brown wants? I mean, you know, until some Republicans come forward and say they're willing to vote for some tax extensions, I think we are having this sort of, you know, this highly hypothetical argument that that has frustrated, I think, has frustrated the governor, but it's kind of inescapable given the state of limbo that we're in with the budget.
And I think it's only going to get worse because, I mean, let's play this out all the way. If the governor wants a September election, the clock now is ticking on having an election in September, just like the ticking clock he heard from some news organizations or that was out there in
that
the winter.
Still ticking.
Yeah, in the winter. Because you have to have a certain amount of lead-up time by elections officials to call an election.
You need about 3 months.
Yeah, so that clock is going to start getting very loud, just looking at the calendar, if you're going to have a September election. You also then have the political issue, two political issues that have to be – we've kind of gotten to, but I want to just beat to death for a moment.
All right, let's do that.
Flog
away.
That's what we do on the podcast. One of them is you've got to get Republicans to approve – what's the best way to figure this out? Once you get past July 1st.
Right. The taxes are gone.
You have to get Republicans then to go up not only on what you call an extension, but what others are going to then flat out call an increase.
Right.
Because they've rolled off the books. So even the September election, well, no, if you get the deal in June. But anyway, but if you wait until next year, you then, I mean, I'm trying to take the governor's side of this, his perspective on this. Then you go back to his problem that he says he hasn't seen the votes for taxes. That's why he has to have an election.
Right.
You then exacerbate that issue because now the election is clearly going to be a tax increase election.
Yep.
And you know, and so on and on and on and on.
Well, and I think
this is, I think you just hit it a moment ago. I'm giving you credit. This is the vexing issue of the entire year.
Yeah.
Not only the taxes, but also the way the taxes are perceived politically. Because frankly, I think it's a distinction without a difference in the policy world.
Oh, absolutely.
But
I think
it's all politics.
I think even rhetorically now, you know, once we missed June, the idea of extensions versus the rhetorical difference of extensions versus increases
became much smaller.
Yeah, especially, you know, especially when you think, well, the income tax technically rolled off in January, and so that was actually an extension. And trust me, this has caused me no end of pain
us, yes.
with our editors here, yeah. as we try to explain this accurately and intelligibly. Those two things often are in conflict. So, I mean, I don't know. Could we have an election in June? What if there were no extensions for this year? What if all the taxes rolled off on July 1 and that, you know, the end of June, you just put it up straight up to roll them back to 2000, you know, hike them back up to 2011 levels? I mean, I don't know. There are a lot of different ways that this could play out. But one thing is for sure, for all those different scenarios that we've mentioned, as of right now, there are exactly zero Republican votes.
At least zero declared Republican right. votes. If they're truly going to vote for it, they're he or she, members of the legislature of those caucuses, holding it close to their vest.
I don't think there were any female yep. members in the mix, potentially. For
I know, but I wanted to be safe. Who knows?
Shannon Grove.
I don't want to.
Diane Harkey.
I don't want to,
where are we going here?
I don't want to put anybody on the spot.
Mimi Walters.
No. Okay, anyway.
Okay.
You just keep naming out Republican women.
Name out no votes. That's
quickly,
what I'll do.
quickly before we pivot to two lesser topics of the week, because the budget is really kind of what we've been talking about for so long. I used to say on the podcast, oh, well, I guess we're talking about the budget again this week. For 4 years we've been talking about the budget on the podcast. But really quickly, Anthony and I had this discussion yesterday. He didn't understand where I was coming from. Now I have shown him not necessarily the light, but at least he sees that I'm not completely cuckoo. He may not agree with what I'm about to say. But I have just noticed that and a lot of people, it's not hard to notice, the rhetorical heat is really noticeable now out there, especially this week on the let's don't extend the taxes because the economy is coming back. Why do we need the taxes? And I understand the political point. I understand the rhetorical point, but I don't see it in the data. And others are going to no doubt be grumpy with me, because especially those who say that the economy is way too dynamic to ever stop at any one point and have what they would call a static snapshot of the economy. That being said, if you look at the governor's revised budget and you look at the numbers, there are two things that stood out to me. One is you do not have a way to really show an economic recovery that's beyond the limited number of dollars that have already been collected. Because, first of all, the Department of Finance doesn't know for sure how we got that extra money. They have a theory about high-income people and wage growth. The Ledge Analyst Office doesn't know for sure. Their theory tends more towards capital gains.
Which is more one-time money.
Yeah. No reason to snore here, folks. I'm not going to go too deep. But the governor's projected revenue increase in the coming year is only based on the thinnest of data. And that's not to say it's not right. It's just nobody really knows. This is forecasting. But if you back the governor's tax extensions out of next year's budget, the $8.6 billion, and that's not and I want to be clear, that's the income tax. That's actually not the income tax, because that would be rolled off that year. That's right. The sales tax. That's the VLF, the car tax, and that's the dependent child exemption thing where you don't get
credit.
As much money back for having kids.
$309 versus $99.
Yeah, which is a lot of money when you start to actually do it in the budget. But anyway, if you roll all of that back out, we wouldn't be facing great revenues. The revenues would actually be lower than they are in the current year, in which case this would be a very different discussion. So to say that the governor could walk away, or that anybody could walk away from the tax extensions and we would still have a windfall, it's actually not right. I mean, we would actually be cutting much deeper. So this, you know, economy's coming back, why raise taxes? Well, the taxes are actually part of the revenue projection that they're saying is all the economy. There's right. my point. You okay. don't have anything to say on it, because I've just...
Nope.
I haven't necessarily lost you.
No, just, I'm with you. I'm yeah. now with you. I'm just taking the fifth. I mean, it's... It's an observation, and
all the way political debates go.
All the Republican staffers can send their objections to John Myers. That's jmyers@kqed.org.
and it's not to say that I don't think there aren't merits to the economy's going to come back. I do. I mean, I think there's a lot of good data out there that shows things are going to get better than they were. It's just I don't see it in the numbers, and I don't see how you can make the case of pulling the tax revenues out and saying everything's peachy, because you would have a hole that you'd have to fill. All right, enough soapbox of that. So two other topics quickly. Let's just play politics, and then I don't even know what to call the last one, but it's kind of the way the world has gone this week. You know. So first one is we had a special election this week for a congressional seat, Jane Harman's seat, who left Congress to be she's heading up the Woodrow Wilson Institute. I apologize to Ms. Harman. I can't quite remember. But she left Congress. And so
she owns Newsweek.
Well, through her late husband's money, yeah. So the race in that part of, what is that?
South
Manhattan
South Bay,
Beach, Marina
South Bay,
Del Rey,
Los Angeles, beach cities.
Yeah, yeah. Down
San
lovely
Pedro.
Coast. The lovely coast of Southern California. South Bay, there you go. We had had an election, 36th congressional district. We're going to have a runoff between Janice Hahn of the iconic Hahn political family in Los Angeles, and Craig Huey, a Republican who I don't know what his background is.
He spent $500,000 on his campaign.
Yeah,
but the
big news is he came out ahead of Democrat Deborah Bowen, sitting Secretary of State, who we all thought there was going to be a Hahn-Bowen runoff, and it was going to be the first test of the Prop 14 top two primary where two people in the same party went on to the second election. It didn't happen. It didn't happen, and I don't know when will I be able to read the tea leaves, if ever, on this, but it leads me to wonder whether all of this dramatic change, again, that was sold as to having voters pass Prop 14 is really going to come to fruition.
Somewhere I hear Mark Paul and Joe Matthews saying, yes, you're right.
You hear me channeling
deck chairs on the Titanic. Well, no, and the question is how much impact will this actually have, either Prop 14 or Prop 11, when the new district lines come out. These are big substantive changes that we've made in the way that we elect our representatives here in California. Whether it will have any of the impacts, I mean, the proponents of both of those measures saw both measures as a way to combat what they view as hyper-partisanship in the Capitol and in Congress, and to elect more moderates, essentially. Whether or not that will work, I think it's going to be 5 years before
and
we
look
know.
And look at, as it was pointed out to me, and this is not necessarily my argument, but with someone I was talking to this morning, and I think it's really worth pondering. Look at the two victors out of the special election. Janice Hahn, who won a lot with a lot of organized labor help, and that would be a left spectrum, and Craig Huey, who's kind of a follower of the Tea Party movement, which is very right to the spectrum. That is not the world that Prop 14 thought was going to come out of an election like that. They thought, now, it's a special election, and so the qualifier is, did you really have the turnout you thought? Because turnout looks like it was around 18% or something by some rough math I did.
Right.
But again, this is not, quote-unquote, moderation that maybe Prop 14 was sold as. This is what we would have gotten, I think, anyway.
We can have a debate whether Janice Hahn is more liberal or more moderate than Deborah Bowen. But,
right. But this was organized labor that really helped her, did it not, in down there?
Yeah, absolutely.
And anyway, and you got a guy who's very conservative and, again, in the Tea Party line of things in the Republicans, which is effectively going to mean Janice Hahn goes to Congress because the numbers just don't work for him now when you have only two. Although, all due respect to him, we'll see what kind of campaign he runs. May the best person win. So in the last we'll make this very short.
Okay.
But how do we not at least reference it, right? A person we have covered for 7 years, four years on this podcast, in the news this week for very different reasons. I mean, and the public, some people are interested in it, but I think they're interested in it the way they are interested in scanning the tabloids at the supermarket.
Celebrity gossip.
Yeah, it's celebrity gossip. It's former Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and all the stuff that played out with him this week, and I don't need to recount the who, the what, the how,
the
money, you know, whatever. Yeah, not that.
Okay.
Not that.
Okay.
Well, it's your newspaper that started it. Though, I know exactly. Isn't that
but in a tasteful way.
Yeah, exactly. Isn't that cheap of me and say, well, it's the LA Times that started this with the story that came out Tuesday morning. But, this admission of the governor and the relationship with the person who worked for him and his family and the child and all of this. and people have beaten it to death. I have been glad. I think this is the way I was going to approach this. Anthony can stop me at any point. I've been glad, A, to not have had to cover it this week.
Amen.
And I give thanks to my editors and the way that my news organization has moved. And B, I've been glad that it did not happen while Arnold Schwarzenegger was still in office. Because, and that's a glad, not only for my sanity, because I think we would have spent all week, I mean, this would have, and actually we wouldn't be done. Oh. We would still be doing this. But I think for the good of the state, frankly, and this is me being, whether I'm taking an editorial position or not, because we would have stopped everything. Everything would have come to a halt.
There would have been resignation drumbeat.
Exactly. There would have been all of this rancor about that. We would have been playing different parlor games. Nobody would have talked about the budget or priorities for the state or even the fun politics we talk about. It would have eclipsed everything.
And all the good work that got done over the last 7 years would have maybe not have come to pass.
Well, who knows? No. Who knows? And I mean, you know, we can play the guessing game of what had happened had it come out during the reelect in 2006 or during any of the part of the second term. Yeah, exactly. Had it come out before the election ever 7.5 years ago and on and on and on and on. But I do think from my standpoint, there's a sigh of relief that it did not and that we're not. And I know some people wish it did because some people wish the elections were different. They wish he had not won in 2003. They wish he had not won in 2006. Different people, and on and on and on and on. But imagine, if you will, what we would have been doing here at the state capitol in Sacramento, what we would have been doing that would have been tough. I mean, imagine the week that a revised budget comes out.
Imagine what 1190 would look like with the press conference room.
Yeah, the briefing room. What a May revise would have been like. I mean, and on and on. The satellite trucks, the TMZ guys would have been, running around Temple and Chicory and the coffee shops and, asking people what they know and on and on and on and on. So
we could have made some good money, right, providing info.
Yes, right. As though we had any info. So that's the only observation I make about that story of the week. I ain't got anything else on that. You got anything else on that?
Nope.
Come on.
Nope.
It's your news organization.
Nope.
Come on.
Nope.
All right. And with that, it's Anthony York from the LA Times. I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.